This is a production of Cornell University.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. Good evening and welcome to the fourth meeting of the GPSA, the fourth fall meeting for 2011. It is October 17th, 5:30 in Malott Hall's Bach Auditorium. First we'll do a roll call of the voting members. You have the sheet. Can you, Shreya? I can just do it from here, but it's not going to be in alphabetical order. Okay. Kyle Albert? Yeah. Brian Alkemeyer?
Here.
Hold on a second. Randa Adra? Absent, excused. Stephen Ahn?
Here.
Nicole Baran?
Here.
YJ Chen? Absent. John Chechelewski?
Here.
Am I close? Evan Cortens here. Andrew Elliott. Carl Furkenhoff.
Here.
Marquise Hawkins will be late. Yevgeny Israelit.
Here.
James Keach.
Here.
Allison Nash.
Here.
Rebecca Robbins. Absent. Eric Smith.
Here.
Mia Tuto.
Here.
Michelle White. Absent. Crystal Wilson.
Here.
Thank you. You'll note that there's one name on there that you didn't recognize. I'd introduce him, but I guess he's not here. Andrew Elliott will be replacing Andrew. Andrew will be replacing Joe Pacelli, who unfortunately, because of a scheduling conflict, is not ever going to be able to make any future GPSA meetings. So that's a pretty good reason, I think, to make the switch. Andrew, would you like to take 20 seconds or so and introduce yourself?
Sure. Andrew Elliott, originally from Little Rock, Arkansas. First year over at Johnson. I guess the normal business thing is background. Worked in a real estate investment trust for a couple years in Chicago. Also director of business improvement district for 2 years in Camden, New Jersey. And we're going to welcome and looking to see what we can, how the justice school can be involved with the greater graduate community.
Great. Thanks, Andrew. Welcome, Andrew. One other quick thing, this is my fault, a minor agenda formatting issue. Resolution 4 is actually unfinished business, not new business, because there was a presentation on that last time. That's my fault. Other than that, what you see up there is the same as what you've got printed. Wonderful. First item of business is the approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes from September 26th? Any corrections? Seeing none, is there any objection to the approval of the minutes from September 26th? Seeing none, the minutes are hereby approved. Next item of business, officer and committee updates. First on the docket, the executive committee, yours truly. The only thing I have is there remain committee vacancies. If this is something that interests you, and I hope that it is, feel free to let myself or Marquise or Nicole know of your interest. A handy-dandy list is available at committees.cornellgpsa.com. Lists what's available, what's vacant, etc. Nicole, do you have any? Wonderful. Next on the list, appropriations. Chris Heckman.
Good evening. So the Appropriations Committee in the past 3 weeks has met with all of the applicants for byline funding. Actually met with all of them. And they've had a conversation about what they're asking for, why they're asking for, what kind of utility they are to graduate student population, et cetera. Those meetings were open to the public. Nobody from the public came, which is fine with me. But we have a lot of discussion that's going to be ensuing in the next few weeks, starting with this evening when we meet with a few of the groups that the committee met with. And we're going to be here in 20 days. So we look forward to making some recommendations to you in 2 weeks from now, and basically that would be it.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions for Chris? No. Next on the agenda, communications. Steve Ahn.
Not much new. We had our first official meeting last Friday. We dealt with the regulation and the public, so we kind of discussed how we can kind of synergize and make sure we work together and keep things progressing. And I got 25 people on my committee, so hopefully that will make life easy for all of us.
Okay. Any questions for Steve? Thank you, Steve. Next on the agenda, Finance Commission, Mia Tutil.
We had A, a huge volume of applications, and B, people asking for a large amount of money. This is in addition to a large amount of money, over 193,000 allocated in April of last semester in our annual budget for this year. So that means that we actually had to do a 5% cut on the annual budget allocations this month, which happened last semester in April. So that brings us to, in total, the annual budget SDRs and CLs, we allocated 61,137.76 in allocation in money. So that means that we only have about 30,000 for the rest of the year to play with. So we anticipate that I'll probably be used up by the end of this semester. So as you probably saw in the email today, I really encourage people to put in applications for the end of October or end of November deadline. If you want money at all this year, it'll be likely being used up. And yeah, come to speak to me about that.
Thanks, Mia. Student advocacy, I don't see Rebecca. Moving on. Programming board, YJ.
Yeah, we had three meetings so far this semester, and meetings are 5:00 to 7:00 p.m. on Thursday. In physical science and building for a 1 day. Also open to the public, feel free to come by if you're curious about what we are doing. And I'd like to extend a thank you to all my wonderful board members for putting on this wonderful interview with Mr. last Thursday. Woo! Anyway, these are our events, future events for the semester. You can read the last part of the slide is the main point. If you don't know about events, or if people in your field don't know where to find our event announcements, tell them to find them, we get to pay them, GTFA to pay them, Facebook is easy to search, find out GTFA, or you can friend a new entity on Facebook.
Thanks, YJ. Not to put you on the spot, but Rebecca,
hi.
Updates from student advocacy. Thanks, Rebecca. Now I'd like to recognize Nighthawk Evanson, our graduate student elected trustee, for an update from the trustees.
So, I think at the beginning of this year, I guess how many people are familiar with what the board trustee does, and about maybe a third of people raise their hand. Tomorrow is your opportunity if you wish to know more or if you wish to express your views on any matters related to the board trustees. Which is the highest governing body at the university, to which they express views on issues affecting the university. So the trustees will be holding a listening session in NAM Library 102, which is the conference room in this walk of the atrium of NAM Library. It's from 4 to 5 p.m. It'll be run by Ethel Cornell, who's
back from the dead.
Extended. And City on the Board of Trustees will be putting on this event. There will be about 8 or 9 trustees there to listen to your concern and answer and tell you a little bit more about how the board functions. So please join us if you're interested. And you can see me or Alex afterward. Alex is our undergraduate student election trustee. You can see us afterward to listen to more about the event.
Great. Thank you, Derek Nighthawk Evanson. That concludes the portion of our agenda on officer and committee updates. We move now into unfinished business. First item is Resolution 4, a resolution expressing graduate and professional student support for Cornell's proposal for an engineering and technology campus in New York City. I would like to recognize to speak first, Steve Ahn.
Nighthawk generously put this resolution together, and a lot of us are supporting it. It's basically GPSA speaking for the graduate and professional students of Cornell, expressing support for Cornell's proposal for this new New York City-based tech campus. It's really kind of weird, you know, Cornell put in their bid, and then the graduate students can say anything about it. It's primarily meant to be a graduate student campus. And for the most part, it talks about why we think Cornell is the best candidate for this new campus. And why it's good for Cornell, because it will help us, you know, ensure so that the world is much more leadership or be much better at it, and also why it's good for New York City. And aside from that, it also expresses some of the, what the GPSA considers to be primary concerns of the graduate professional student community concerning this new campus. For the most part, you know, the biggest concern is probably cohesion, right? If you come to Cornell as a graduate student and you are placed in this campus, or you apply for this campus, you don't really want to miss out on the experience of all the rest of the Cornell graduate students and the community that comes to that. You know, not only is that important academically because you want to collaborate with people maybe in the field, but it's also important socially and just for your overall experience during your grad school experience. The other major concern is that we want to make sure that this isn't sort of overstretching Cornell financially, and the provost has made sure that the primary way in which this will be funded is by philanthropy, so there's people giving us money. We have everyone who wants to ask their campus name acronyms. That's a great way of taking money. And also, of course, the UFC itself is giving a ton of money into this project. And another concern is that although right now the campus kind of primarily focused on technology and computer science and a little bit of other engineering fields, we hope that in the future this campus will expand and also to include, you know, other fields such as social sciences, biology, and what have you. And this is very important because, you know, we're sort of all in this together and you don't want to just single out a single field or area with this. And lastly, we express our hope that in planning all this, the administration will continue to seek guidance and advice from the GSA. And that's pretty much it. I hope this will pass today, so that because the applications are due in about 4 weeks, I think. So the sooner we can pass this, the more momentum that will add to our decision. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
12 minutes. Okay. No, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Is there anyone who wishes to claim time to speak in opposition to the resolution? Seeing none, we're now in formal debate. I want to very quickly mention, this is strictly speaking an amendment since it happens after it was submitted. Is there any objection to including two further co-sponsors, Creston Mansfeld, former president of the GPSA and current field representative for civil and environmental engineering, and Yevgeny Israelit, current GPSA physical sciences voting member? Any objection? Without objection. So ordered. The resolution is hereby amended. Is there anybody who would wish to speak in formal debate on this resolution? Kyle Albert.
I guess I'm just a little bit uncomfortable with this resolution because it seems like it's being packaged as something that we're trying to show graduate student community support for this new campus. But it's almost like it's being, like this resolution itself is something that's supposed to be contributing to Cornell's bid. And I feel like I don't want to vote no against it to any way impede the university's bid for this campus. But at the same time, there are legitimate concerns that are out there in terms of whether this campus could compete with different departments in terms of funding and resources. There's obviously many other concerns that were raised in the university assembly meeting, I think last week, that UA will be talking to President Gorton about. So, and I just want to be on the record saying that it's just the way that this resolution is worded in such a way that it's being put out there as something supposed to complement the bid of the university is just making me feel a little bit uncomfortable. Like, it's not a, just a little bit uncomfortable about whether we can really have a great, whether this is really a good forum for us to debate this and communicate our concerns about it to the administration.
Further comments and formal debate? Rebecca.
Just as a conversation, I definitely see where you're coming from. And the challenge of this being like we're making statements that all graduates are guaranteed worth it. But correct me if I'm wrong, I do believe that we're really under a time pressure for the bid that's going through. And that was probably a huge one of the biggest factors in getting that off the rate of speed from
the application is due in 11 days. I should also offer a point of clarification. As you can see on line one here, the resolution is the GPSA expressing its support. It is not us saying all graduate and professional students support this. So just a quick point of clarification. Further comments and formal debate? John.
I would say that I'm really glad that you're going through this expansion and this bid is really important for now. I just don't feel that I mentioned.
Thank you, John. Nighthawk.
I'd like to speak to some of the legitimate things that have raised about funding. And my understanding with relation to the funding is that the two main entities of the university, the two main academic units that are going to be involved in this new campus, are the College of Engineering and the Faculty of Computing and Information Sciences. And Dean Dan Huttenlocher and Dean Van Kahn have expressed that they think that the funding, the philanthropy that's going to fund this new campus would be central to the mission of their departments here at Ithaca, as opposed to, and they've articulated these visions in the strategic plan that was passed by the university about a year and a half ago. And so those who deemed mentioned that they think that this is forwarding that current mission and that this would be an extension of the campus rather than sort of creating a new department, a new field, a new interdisciplinary hub down in New York City. So take that for what it's worth, but I think that is not going creating a new mission or going against the current mission of the university, but rather fulfilling that mission.
Further comments, informal debate. I should remind members that formal debate means you can't speak more than once until everybody else has spoken, and you're limited to 90 seconds at a time. There's also a motion to consider informally if you would like to relax those limits. Comments, informal debate. Chris Heckman.
So I am curious about the issue that this is not going to be funded through philanthropy. Hypothetically, if I'm a person who's rich and I'm going to get money to Cornell, now I have a decision. I was going to get it before, and now I'm going to get it, but there's just a larger draw. More people are asking for that money now. Is the philanthropy that's mentioned in raising funds for this campus supposed to mean that these are people that would not have normally given money, or is it that philanthropy that would have previously gone to departments if they fund another chair professor or maybe 10 new first year fellowships or something aren't going to go to that anymore, now they're going to go to the new campus?
The member would like to yield to Nighthawk for an answer.
It is up to the chair. Okay.
Now you can yield your time. Go ahead.
Vice President for Development, Charlie Slager, believes that this will not draw funds away from
other areas to allocate them to this new campus. The campus will need over 10 years, $35 million per year in funding, and combined with college of engineering and the faculty of computing information sciences are currently slated within our current capital plan sort of development goal to be making $45 million a year, and a lot of that was going to go towards faculty hiring, and so some of the faculty hiring would be shifted from the university campus to the New York City campus, and so there might be faculty hiring down there that wouldn't be up here as a result, but again, the team thought that that fit better within the strategic plan for those units. And I mean, that might fit every faculty member in those, you know, areas of college engineering faculty, but they decide to feel that. But there are those that fit squarely within that plan.
Thank you. Further comments and formal debate? Or I'll say the chair would entertain a motion to consider informally or a motion to call a previous question.
James Keach. Clarification. The only other university that so far put an interest in having a bid for this is Stanford.
The initial expression of interest includes about 28 different universities. I don't know how many are going forward with the final bid. It's widely considered the media outlets that Cornell and Stanford as front runners for winning.
Further comments and formal debate? Brian.
With line 3435, where we speculate on other programs that would benefit from the campus, I'm wondering, we might consider a slight language change just to not seem to limit where we think the potential of it is. It is mostly an engineering and technology campus, but it's conceivable that sometime in the future humanities won't be able to benefit from it. And I don't think we need to mention the humanities explicitly. I'm just saying we might consider saying something like other fields, including, and that way we're not necessarily limiting what we see the scope of it to those three things. We just list them as some especially obvious fields that we have.
So do I sense a motion to amend?
Yes. Well, yes.
Would it? How about in other fields before physical, such as the physical, natural, and social sciences?
Yes.
Is that a fair statement of your wording?
Yeah. Or in other fields, comma, including physical, natural, and social sciences. That's what I'm suggesting.
Sorry. So the question is on the amendment. Is there a second for the amendment? Did I say it wrong?
It strikes me that's clear because physical, natural, and social science are fields of your division. So you say other fields, including.
How about the other one?
Is there a second for the amendment?
Second.
I sense an amendment to the amendment. We've got other programs such as the proposed amendment language. Is there a motion? Allison?
If I wanted to do it, I'd say a motion to add language.
Just start talking.
Because it's the physical, natural, social sciences, and design.
Is there a second on the amendment to the amendment? This is fun, isn't it? Great. Is that fair, Allison?
I have an objection to that.
Brian objects.
Yeah, because the original amendment I'm suggesting is so that we don't seem to limit the scope of what the campus might benefit. And that wording seems to, once again, say that we need specific benefits just to those, you know.
Marquise.
How about it just say, in other disciplines, here.
So, how about this? Withdraw the amendment to the amendment. Withdraw the amendment. Marquise's new amendment is further develop our excellence in other disciplines. In other disciplines. Is that a fair statement of your amendment, Marquise? Is there a second for the amendment? Seconded by Brian. Question is on the amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the amendment, raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Just the green placard, sorry. 15. Those opposed? None? The amendment is adopted. We're running short on time. Is there a motion to call the previous question? Moved by Marquise. Is there a second? Any objection? Seeing none, the question is on the adoption of the resolution as amended. Those in favor, please raise your placard. Green placard, keep it up long enough so I can count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Those opposed? 0. 14 to 0. The resolution is adopted. Thank you. We had an abstention, but in a ruling from the chair, we're not counting abstentions anymore. You can just do the math. The way that it works is there's yes, no, and didn't vote. And didn't vote can include absences, abstentions, and so on. So we have a majority. That's what matters. Sorry, I just sort of did that. Next item of business is Resolution 5. A resolution reviewing the role of the student elected trustees on the Board of Trustees. Okay. I'll recognize myself to speak on the resolution. The resolution, you'll note, does not offer any specific course of action. Rather, it serves to say that it is a student issue, an issue that affects all students. Namely, that in 1984, you read that the Board of Trustees was contracted, reducing the number of student members from 5 to 2. The board was expanded back in 2002 to 64 seats, but it remained at 2 seats for students. In 2006, it was decided that elections would alternate between graduate students eligible to run and undergraduate students eligible to run. This means that undergraduate students in even class years, if they're to run, must run as a freshman. So when they've only been on the campus for a few years. This past time around, when Alex Boris won the election, there were no freshmen who ran. I think it's intimidating to the point where it basically prevents freshmen from running for this position. The idea is to call the attention of the Board of Trustees in their meeting this weekend to consider this issue. Again, it doesn't offer a specific course of action, just merely points out that this is an issue affecting students. I'll now recognize anybody who would like to claim time in opposition to the amendment. Seeing none, we're in formal debate. Yevgeny. I should be clear and say that the resolution doesn't actually ask for anything. Alex, would you be comfortable discussing your proposal?
Sure. So I'm Alex Boris. I'm the undergraduate student elected trustee. And the proposal I put forward before the board help from Derek and others was gave 3 different options to add another student trustee. At this point, I think that the way forward was added to another undergraduate student trustee because of the specific issues with how short undergraduates are here, as well as the fact that there are quite as many undergraduates as there are graduate students. I think since 2006, when they split, the undergraduate and graduate trustees have been able to work very well. I don't want that student to die false to them, but I think we've worked very well together. And I think that unique issue of there being more undergraduates just about that. But I think having more student voices, regardless, helps everyone.
Thank you. Further comments and formal debate? Mike Walsh.
Yeah, you know, I was a former student trustee myself, and I was like the idea of having a whole equitable sort of thing. Just for the sake of having a position in the struggle of a lot of work, and it's been great to have some friendly faces on the board, younger or friendly faces on the board. I'm a little bit concerned by this fourth grad spot, and as Lucy brought up earlier, the argument that freshmen are unfairly disadvantaged because they would have to run, even though your students would have to run in the freshman year. While I understand the how this problem came up over the last year or so, and not seeing a lot of freshmen or any freshmen at all running the previous election, there's actually more evidence to the contrary. Right before the seats were split, the seat was won by a first year international graduate student who had started out with a very small constituency here at Cornell. The following year, a freshman in a field of 13 actually got an endorsement and ended up placing close second to the eventual winner in the field of upperclassmen that include both juniors and sophomores. Even though this race this year wasn't a trustee election, the guy who dressed as an elf in the FA freshman election garnered more votes than I did when I ran for student elected trustee. The freshman class is very well concealed. I actually think there might be a lot of advantages to running as a freshman, and I really don't see this argument holding a lot of weight as this proposal moves forward.
Thank you, Mike, for the campaign advice, among other things. Are there, I recognize the next speaker. What I'll do is I'll hold up my hand when you have 5 seconds remaining. Chair would also entertain a motion to consider informally if you would like to relax those limits. Are there further comments in formal debate? Steve.
So the very last of all thoughts, the UPSA service willingness to work, concretely to that thing.
I'll recognize myself, if I may. The idea here is basically the resolution will be sent to the Board of Trustees. We're willing to work with them, or I at least, others I think as well, are willing to work with them in whatever context they feel makes most sense. They would like us to form a committee. That's something we can consider. They would just like to ask our input, formally, informally, that's something we can consider as well. Further comments? Informal debate? Chair would also entertain a motion to consider informally, a motion to amend, likewise a motion to call the previous question. Motion to consider informally, is there a second? Seconded by Brian, is there any objection? Seeing none, we are now considering informally, which means that you can speak more than once, and I'm not going to time you. Question.
I'm curious with the programs that are not for the 3 years in graduate school, if they have any representation on the board. There's many master's students and M students, a lot of students that students that did the students are here for 3 years of classes.
Preston doesn't need to yield his time. You can simply put your hand up. And
as someone in a 3.5-year master's program, I think in a program of architecture, your level of enrollment is up to you and the people that are here for the evening. Whereas PhD students, it's actually they're more looking for opportunities to network and really get involved so that they can become future faculty members. And I haven't heard of or been privy to any anyone feeling upset or
further comments and informal debate. Chair would also entertain a motion to close debate. Moved by Marquise. Is there a second? Brian?
I was going to comment that actually, that if you just think in terms of proportional representation, then Alex planned to have two undergrad trustees and one grad trustee seems logical.
Thank you. So the Marquise has moved the previous question. Is there a second? Seconded. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the question is on the adoption of the resolution. This is Resolution 5, a resolution reviewing the role of the student elected trustees on the Board of Trustees. Those in favor, please raise your green placard. Keep it up long enough for me to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Those opposed? Zero. With a vote of 15 to zero, Resolution 5 is adopted. And with that, seeing that our 610 guests are here, I would like to recognize Mary Fessenden, Christina Beyer, etc., to speak on behalf of Cornell Cinema. Pardon? I can't hear you. You can sit or stand wherever you'd like. That might be a good spot right there. The problem with standing right at the front is that then you're blinded by the projector. Say, if you can't read this document or you're interested more in it, I'd be happy to send it to you after the meeting. Just let me know. Thank you, Mary, for coming to speak to us.
Thank you, Mary. It's pretty much going to be my comment, so if that's okay. I guess let me know if you have trouble hearing me, but seems like this is good. Cornell Cinema, who we are. Cornell Cinema has an international reputation as one of the best campus film exhibition programs in the country. Our primary mission is educational, to offer campus and Ithaca all-inclusive selections from the entire spectrum of film and electronic media, including documentaries, classics, international, silent, and experimental films, as well as live film-related events that illuminate the cinematic form. Much of this work is not shown anywhere else in the region. Our secondary purpose is to provide affordable second-run film entertainment for the Cornell community. More specifically, we show approximately 250 different programs. 250 different programs each year. We program films 7 nights a week, providing a nightly escape hatch for students working in a stressful environment. We screen foreign films from around the world, a great service to Cornell's large international community. We premiere documentaries addressing a wide range of topics of interest to graduate students from fields across campus, oftentimes with faculty introductions and panel discussions. We host special guest presentations by visiting filmmakers and film scholars. We show films in conjunction with conferences and symposia. We host unusual live music film events, and we program historical and other thematic film series. We offer more programming per activity fee dollar spent than any other organization funded by the activity fee and reach the broadest cross-section of students at Cornell. Cornell Cinema is a model program in melding together aspects of both student and academic life in shaping the lives of students who take advantage of our offerings and providing an unprecedented 7-night-a-week affordable early and late-night program option as an alternative to the bar scene. If you're curious about how graduate students are directly involved with the organization, we do have a student advisory board. There are currently 4 graduate students serving on the student board, and they come from a variety of fields: law, the Institute for Public Affairs, business, and English. We have paid and volunteer part-time positions that are filled by graduate students. We have them working for us as writers, projectionists, theater staff, and ushers. There are currently 5 graduate students, and they come from East Asian Studies, Health Studies, Comp Lit, Romance Studies, and Astronomy. We have graduate students introduce films on occasion. They also participate in conferences and symposium with a film component, and in post-screening panel discussions. Graduate student organizations also submit co-sponsorship proposals to Cornell Cinema, and their members benefit from the screenings that take place as a result. Recent examples include the Coalition for Pan-African Scholars, Cornell Advocates for Human Rights, PG Kino, which is a German student organization, the Turkish Student Association, Anthropology Graduate Student Association, Environmental Law Society, the Southeast Asia Program Graduate Committee, and the Society for Natural Resources Conservation. There are some other services that benefit graduate students. We present a semi-annual IFAKID Film Festival, reasonably priced children's programming for grad students who have small children. We work with the Big Red Barn Graduate and Professional Student Association to offer a monthly reduced price grad night for just $2. And as some of you may know, we did just recently show the PhD movie, very popular. As far as our overall attendance, in fiscal year 09-10 and fiscal year 10-11, overall attendance was a little over 29,000 and 28,000 respectively. Of those numbers, between 7 and 9,000 were graduate student admissions, or about 25 to 30% of our overall attendance. And the range of graduate students availing themselves of our programs is very wide. Students from the sciences, humanities, and professional fields attend Cornell Cinema. As this document shows up here, we got feedback from many of them in the fall of 2009 regarding their usage and perceived value of Cornell Cinema. And I hope you get a chance to read some of those comments, because they give you a range of feedback. But there are benefits to graduate students beyond attendance figures. Faculty members and students regularly tell us that Cornell Cinema is one of the reasons they don't feel as isolated as they otherwise would in such a small town. Even if they can't make it to all of the Cornell Cinema programs that they would like to, Cornell Cinema's presence makes them feel better about being here. Cornell Cinema helps attract and retain quality faculty and graduate students in Ithaca. And the regularity of our programming, which I've already made reference to, 7 nights a week, is unique and offers an outlet on any evening a graduate student needs a break, either to get away from the stress of their studies or as an alternative to the bar scene. In addition, many of the films Cornell Cinema screens are relevant to graduate students' research or their teaching. And Cornell Cinema's ticket prices are particularly suited to graduate students' budgets. To summarize our funding request, Cornell Cinema is requesting an increase from $1,105 to $1,150 per student. We seek this 45-cent student increase because film rental costs have gone up, our funding from the New York State Council on the Arts has gone down due to the situation with the New York State budget, and in addition to this, funding from the Cornell Council for the Arts, which is being restructured this year, is very up in the air in the future and may result in much less funding from that organization. Even if we're granted the increase of 45 cents, we will have to think of other ways to raise additional money or cut costs, because we can't afford to drain our reserve account as much as the budget submitted in our proposal project doing. Even so, if the GPSA grants our request of $11.50 per student, we promise to hold the graduate student ticket price to $4 for the next 2 years. That's it. I'm done.
Thank you, Mary. Are there any questions from Mary?
None. Okay.
You said you're going to hold the graduate student ticket price constant. So have you verified someone the graduate student on the grad?
We have a card reader, so we can scan a card.
In terms of operating Cornell Cinema, what I guess this is, oftentimes when I live in Cornell Cinema, and I love it, I find that the theaters are often very empty, and if
spaces not being utilized to, you know, well, you know, it's a set. And so I was wondering if there are any plans or efforts to try to get more of an audience, or just maybe market in a way that there will be more students going to the classroom.
Well, let's see, a few ways of answering that question. For one, just so you know, 2 years ago when we went through this process, a similar question came up, and one thing I did was contact Cinemopolis, the art house downtown. I don't know whether you guys are familiar with it. So I was just kind of curious, what is their average attendance per screening, just as a point of comparison. And they went back and checked their records, and their average attendance per screening is 16. Ours is closer to 50 per screening, is what we're averaging out. And as you know, we show a wide range of different programs. So we have sort of the popular Hollywood stuff, and then we have more obscure experimental things and everything in between. So we necessarily know that we're going to have smaller attendance for some programs and larger for some other ones. I will definitely admit that I wish we had some more people coming for certain things. Other things are totally meeting, you know, the projections. I sort of know that if we get 30 people for that, that's good for the nature of that particular film. And then if we're showing a popular Hollywood film, I would have different expectations for that. We do lots and lots of stuff to promote and get the word out of our screenings, and we're always trying to come up with new ways to get the word out, and that's a way in which the Student Advisory Board is very helpful, to kind of give us some new ideas, but we do lots of targeted marketing. Cinema just in general is in the whole world is kind of in a funny place right now. If you read any trade magazines, you'll sort of find that because of the increasing competition from the internet and all the different ways in which people can view films, you know, whether it's on an iPhone or, you know, downloading stuff onto your laptop, and then just all of the things that are on the internet that are competing for, you know, individuals' attention, whether it be, you know, Facebook or YouTube or all of these things. And so a lot of cinemas are sort of struggling with exactly trying to find the balance of how to sort of operate in this sort of new environment, relatively new environment. And what I will say is that Cornell Cinema's attendance has remained pretty steady for the last 5 years. We haven't seen it, you know, going down, 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 down. And I will stress again that our average attendance per screening is actually much better than Cinemopolis's. And so I think you need to take that into account as you're thinking about this, because it's kind of the nature, you know, of the business, and they're staying in business, and so you sort of balance it out with unearned income sources, and then knowing that some things will attract more people, other things won't attract as many. But as I said, I'm always happy to have more people come. So and we're always seeking to increase attendance.
We have about 20 seconds left. Time for a very quick question with a quick answer. Allison?
I was just curious what the proportion of the students who received an undergrad pay for
the proportion of our budget? Is that what you mean?
What is the dollar amount in undergraduate? 9, I believe.
It's 10. It was cut back from 11 2 years ago, and we are actually asking them for restoration of that dollar they cut, plus an additional 50 cents. We would like to have undergraduates and graduate students paying the same amount. It's much easier for us at the box office to have it be the same amount. So we are, you know, hoping that that happens. But if it doesn't happen, and we do get the $11.50 from you guys, as I said, we would keep the ticket price at $4 for graduate students, and then it'll just depend on what the SA decides to do as far as what amount we set for their ticket price.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Sure. Thank you.
Now I'd like to recognize Jeff Hall and Larry Quant to speak on behalf of SA.
Yeah.
Jeff, I'm Larry. We also have our colleague Andrea Dutcher with us in case there's any questions we can't handle. So,
just to let you know that I'll signal you when you have 3 minutes, one minute remaining.
So who's controlling the...
I.
Okay. So our presentation will be fairly brief. We are here tonight asking for the same amount of money that we have been receiving in the current cycle, and we're proposing the same level of benefits for the graduate and professional student community. So if you could go forward one. We're proposing that we provide free admission to all intercollegiate sports events with the exception of men's ice hockey for all graduate and professional students and their immediate families, which we define as spouse and dependent children. We're also proposing that we provide a discounted price for men's hockey season tickets, a price that is $5 per game, less than the price to the general public. We have allocated 250 tickets for the graduate and professional student community, which we would continue. We would also provide you with the first option to buy any tickets that the undergraduates don't buy out of their allotment. Also, as in the past, we would propose providing continued access to all of our various fitness and physical education programs. In return for this, we're asking for $7 per student per year, which is the same as we're receiving now and is consistent with what we get from what we're requesting from the undergraduates. We are actually requesting $10 per student from them, but three of that is for a student marketing fund that they have funded us in the past. So the $7 is equal to what we're asking from the undergraduates. What's the value of what we're proposing? If you assume 16 home games, the ticket discount for a season ticket for hockey is $80. The Big Red Sports Pass, which provides the free admission to the other events, it's really, you can't calculate it. It's based on how many times someone goes to a game and whether they take a spouse and children. We have been fortunate that both the graduate students and the undergrads have agreed to these funding mechanisms, so the Big Red Sports Pass essentially is free. If we didn't have the funding and we had to sell it, we place a value of $50 on it. So I think it's pretty clear that for a $7 investment, the return is quite good. Commitments we would make in return for continued funding, we would agree not to raise the ticket prices for the discounted ticket prices for men's ice hockey, which is currently $13 a game for the period of the next byline funding cycle. We would, as I mentioned, we would provide graduate and professional students with the first option to buy any unsold undergraduate tickets. And we would continue to work with the graduate and professional community to determine effective means of access for recreational facilities and programs. So that is our presentation. Short and sweet. And we would be happy to answer any questions.
About 5 minutes for questions.
I have a question about the Big Red Sports Pass.
Okay.
If I understand the street, everyone who signs up for it online, they charge a $3 admission fee for people who don't go through the process of signing up for it online. So I was wondering what's the purpose. I mean, if you're giving it away to anybody for free, what who pre-registered for it online, what's the purpose of that $3 application admission fee?
Well, we've used that kind of as part of a marketing or tracking purpose. We want to maintain certainly the value of the Big Red Sports Pass and the funding that we receive currently. If we ever have to go back or lose that funding, we want to make sure we maintain that value. So that's pretty much kind of the concept, you know, behind that. And from a tracking standpoint, we're using the electronic scanners as people are coming into the different events to be able to collect data, to be able to reach out to the Big Red Sports Pass holders in the futures for events that maybe have the capacity or limited tickets that would have to actually print out a ticket to come to a particular event.
Further questions? A point of time? Yeah?
Difficult problems with exact numbers and what calls will come about and what other people are not to this talk, but I was wondering if you were rough idea of how many grad students might not to the talk, if they join grad students to try and get
I don't have those, and this is the Big Red Sports Pass again. I don't have those exact numbers. We certainly could find those out, but I don't have those. I
can tell you that we introduced this 4 or 5 years ago, and it started slow, but it's kind of leveled off at about 7,000 to 8,000 students now. I don't know how many of those are graduate and professional students and how many are undergrads.
We've tried to also be very flexible with the graduate students in terms of their guests. You know, Larry had mentioned that for their spouse and dependents, and we've been very flexible in terms of that manner when they've come up and needed additional tickets when some they may have some different family or guests in town as well. So, but I don't have those exact numbers. We certainly could get some approximate or closer numbers if those are needed.
You want to provide them to me, I'm happy to send them out to the members.
Great.
Chris, I would call if you have activity service from last year, please put in a reminder, we have a question not to come in the sports pass, but I think it was you go to other events, at least one, to get the memo. If you went to use sports pass, so if you have something printed, so you have something.
The question is, did you use the Big Red Sports Pass to gain admission to any of these events? This is page 3 of the preliminary survey that was sent out. The question, it doesn't, of course, ask, did you sign up? So it is theoretically possible that people signed up and then they went to an event and they're not counting that question. Other questions? There are no other questions. I see that our next guest, Cole.
I know that one thing that I guess the real concern of grad students is access to the gym. One, whether or not they should be, I guess, how expensive the membership fees are for the gym, in addition to the hours. And many graduates can find that the gym hours are not consistent with, well, crazy lab schedules and sort of late nights and things like that. So this is a perennial concern.
So I think I'd like to ask Andrea to address that because she oversees that area.
So there's when classes are being held, there's a fitness center that's open from 6 o'clock in the morning until 11:30 at night, Monday through Friday. And then on weekends, this one is open on Saturday from 10 in the morning until 10 at night. And on Sundays from 11 in the morning until midnight. So, what's the knowledge of midnight to 6 a.m.? This is me, so I'm not going to direct the students to work out. Well, we do have plenty of facilities and facilities you can get in there without anybody being on the machines or anything. There is a fitness center open. And I currently chose to go with 4 different fitness center sites. I was working in one large institution that wanted to be on the rec center, or could be on our campus. And we need to have, four more students be able to run on one. So, it's been centralized so that it could be convenient to as many people as possible.
The question very quick, we're over time.
So, what was the hours? I think a lot of the issues with grad students isn't necessarily during when classes are in session during the break, when, especially when they're breaking from all the undergrads are gone, but grad students are all here. And the gyms often are closed or closed at 5 or summer hours or 2. Gyms being open at North Campus is probably the least convenient thing for most grad students, so it's very few undergrads. So,
during the
first hour
of any graduate students who disappear. So that in mind, we try to keep the facilities open. That is the most value for the buck. So tell them to have a pool, the bowling center, the gym, the dance studio, and the large fitness center on campus.
So I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd be happy if there are further questions, you can send them to me. I'll send them on to Jeff and Larry, and if they would be so kind, I'd be happy to collect their answers and send them back. Let's thank athletics for coming. Chris, get set up. Chris,
thank you. Yeah, point of information. So while we're debating the student activity fee, we have basically seen that athletics and physical education are two separate bodies. While their organization at the university level does not reflect that, what we pay for in the student activity fee is the athletics part for the most part. So just saying, this discussion about gyms, I don't want to stifle it, I want to encourage it, but I don't want it to be part of the activity fee funding discussion unless the body feels very strongly that it should be. So that's going to be my encouragement to the process.
Thank you, Chris. With that, I'd like to recognize Chris Corda from the Big Red Barn.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome, Chris.
Hi, how you doing? I am going to be brief. The Big Red Barn is your student center. All the programs that we do at the Barn are for all for graduate and professional student centers and organizations and departments. We have over 300 uses of the Barn all year, which is an average of about 10 a week, and I believe that this year we're doing much more than that. I feel like all of a sudden they've discovered the Barn, which is wonderful. But if you look on our calendar, every night we have two or three things going on, which is great. I'm asking for an additional dollar this year, and it is based on a couple different things. The loss of our support from the graduate school, based on budget cuts and that kind of thing. Increase in going green, and we are 99.9% green. The only thing that we still haven't been able to find is lids for the cold cups. But everything else is green in the Barn, and it's great, but it costs more, and we now pay for, the dumpster landfill and also compost pickup. I've learned just through the last meeting that I had with the finance committee that they're on the survey that you guys did, 36% of graduate students use the Barn, which is great and wonderful. And so it's definitely something that graduate professional students get a lot of use out of. We had another fellow at it this year, and that is due to because we're having so many more programs that basically most of our programs come from students coming to us and saying, hey, this is a great idea, can we do it? And if at all possible, we do, and then it becomes popular, and then we continue to do it. So we've actually added on another social program fellow because of the high demand for more programs. And that's my presentation. Do you have any questions?
We have about 5 minutes for questions. Chris Clark.
Chris. Hi.
So we're all dying for the Barn. So how does it work? So
No, no. We share the cost. They purchase all of their wares that are compostable, and we purchase all of ours. And then they buy landfill trash bags, and I buy the compost trash bags, and then we split the cost of the picking up. It's still split. Basically that's the agreement between Dan and us.
Chris, point of information. As my understanding is that the survey said 36% of graduate students use it per month.
Oh,
I
wow.
I think that was correct.
Well, I need to see the survey. I haven't seen the survey yet.
If you're on our mailing list, so you should have gotten it along with the agenda.
Oh, okay.
The question is, in the last month, did you visit the Big Red Barn? 36% yes, 64% no. Of course, that is of respondents. About 65% of students responded, as we talked last time, the examples represented.
Okay.
Thank you. Kyle?
Yeah. I'm curious about the SNAP service and what kind of the economics of that is. I've noticed it's often very slow on weekday evening. Mm-hmm. One does SNAP service actually break email? And also, what have you thought about ways to improve ways to bring more people in?
The snack service is we don't pay for anything that we don't sell. So, like Diamond provides all the food, and then we pay them whatever we sell. We pay their cost at cost. So that's kind of nice. To tell you the truth, the beer sales is what really it pays for a lot of our expenses. And the snack service comes out even. When you consider the cost of staff, it basically breaks even. We don't make a big huge profit on it, and we don't lose much. We don't. As far as people coming in and getting, marketing it and that kind of thing to get people to come in, we haven't done anything in that area. We basically, if people that come in for programs and if they want something to eat. Okay, so now it's $8. I'm asking for $8.
Oh.
That's your question. Sorry. I have no idea. I mean, that's not something that they're promising me. Yeah.
Very quickly, is Noel Cornelio here? If not, I'm happy to keep getting it as long as you're willing to stay.
Sure.
Do you have any?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you've ever had discussions about extending the hours of GIS for a lot of typical families who don't read.
It's funny.
A little later.
Okay. The problem with that is it's really the beer and being able to keep it cold, and we already have problems with it cooling. And so the longer we extend it, the more beer we have to have, the more we have to keep cold. And we only have
we probably
can't more. But we physically don't have any place to put it at a kegerator. That's basically the limits that we have, is that, that we have the four, we now are even using five, but we're using all five of them. And it's just, with the turnover, it's just kind of too difficult to keep it cold.
Other questions for Chris?
Would it be possible to start it later and then end it later, or to start at 30 minutes?
You mean starting at 5 and going to 7:30?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be too difficult. I came in and that's the time. Like, I didn't have anything to do at the time, but it does allow another group to have something afterwards. And a half an hour, I don't think it's going to make that much difference. But if that is something that, this is the first I've heard that. And we usually do have people at 4 o'clock sitting there waiting for us. So I don't know. I don't know if that's something we would do a survey about. Is that a decision that I can just make and start it, I don't know.
Allison?
I just had a quick question about your grain crop, and I was curious if you ever considered offering some kind of financial incentive for people to bring their own cups and cutlery.
There's big liability with that. And we can't even use your cup twice. Like if you come back with your empty beer cup, it's a big health, it's, you know, the health department. So we can't have you bring your own and, you know, and then keep serving you in that cup. That's out of our hands.
I think you addressed some comments. I guess I'm going to ask if it's possible to make a survey about the hours that Peter and Mark should be offered. It should be, you know, like, I guess, you could catch that.
I think we could do that.
Derek?
This is my fifth year in grad school here. And I think about 3 months ago, someone finally confirmed for me that you actually can get beer at the Big Red Barn on days other than Friday.
Right.
And I've been involved with it, you know, with the great government and whatnot, 4 or 5 years. And so I also heard at that time that it was some sort of strange university regulation that prevents the Big Red Barn from letting people know that the beer is good.
Well,
so we should just comment on that. Because provision of, you know,
it's the university policy. In fact, the grad school is now looking at this. The university policy is that you cannot advertise alcohol at a discount rate. And because Ithaca, the town of Ithaca, does not charge $1 for 12-ounce beer, we have discounted beer. So you can't, like I can advertise TGIF, and at TGIF we have dollar beers because the focus is TGIF. But I can't say, come to the Big Red Barn, dollar beers. That's the university alcohol policy. And so we kind of, I mean, we do every program that we have, we say in dollar beers.
The name of the Big Red Barn. Big Red Barn and dollar beers.
There you go.
We have time for one more question. And then I'll recognize Chris Peckman to summarize Slowpay's presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I could be Slowpay calling me right now, but I don't want to answer my phone.
Oh, no, this is not Slowpay. Oh, they're calling you?
I don't know.
I'm not very well.
One more question.
How expensive is it to get more iterators or employees?
It's not a matter of expense as much as it is space. We really don't have any place to put them.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Kit. You're welcome.
Thank you. Chris Heckman has graciously agreed to summarize Slowpay's presentation, and there's no sign of Slowpay.
Okay. So I am not the best person in this presentation. I look for Slowpay program board representatives, but I can't find them. So here it goes. Slowpay is asking for an increase from approximately $3
$3.05
to $7 this year. Okay, just because I'm not Slowpay. So the reason why is primarily because when they were meeting with us, they gave the argument that there's parity involved in the admission for graduate students and undergraduate students. Parity, according to the Slowpay Programming Board, is defined as multiply the total number of students that pay the activity fee, and then by the number that they're paying, so you get some lump sum. Have that be divided by the number of people that go, and then you'll get some admission fee for Slowpay. That number comes out to somewhere between $10 and $30. Now you have a fraction of the graduate student population that goes to Slowpay, and you take that gross number, you divide the number that all graduate students pay, which is X in this equation, we're solving for that number, and then you'll get this number out that graduate students should be paying to the student activity fee to make it so that graduates and undergraduates pay the same amount for admission to Slowpay. In order for that number to be at parity, you need $7. I can go through this calculation with you later if you didn't follow me. So the idea behind it is that there are Slowpay is actually a well-used
for those of you that didn't know this before, Slope Day is a well-used activity. 27% of graduate students attended Slope Day last year, or the year before last year. The vast majority of graduate students stay longer than 30 minutes. 60% of those who attended stay greater than an hour. So that is going against any arguments we've used in the past, for instance, to say, graduate students come, but they don't really like to come, or something like this. On top of that, the Slope Day Programming Board has been extremely attentive to, speaking as Slope Day Programming Board, they've been extremely attentive to the concerns of graduate students, bringing in different kinds of performers that would be applicable and attractive to both undergraduates and graduate students. In the past, they've tried a premium beer option. The year they tried that, it didn't really go so well, so they brought it back, but they did try it after hearing considerations from graduate students. They've added seats for their executive committee to the Slope Day Programming Board so that graduate students have a say in who goes to or who is going to be performing at Slope Day, what they're spending money on, et cetera, and also other programmatical aspects. Slope Day, in a sense, is just very expensive, so that means that it's going to be an expensive program. The idea behind the Slope Day's Programming Board, the strategy for them is that they want to basically get a better and better performer each year so that it's a safer event. If you bring in a nice performer, then people aren't going to be drinking at 9 a.m. and completely wasted by the time the performer starts performing. They're going to actually be wanting to go to Slope Day and be a part of that activity. They have survey data to back this up, actually, if you don't believe me. I think that's all that we had to say. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, Ed?
I'll just underscore, they really do stress this point that the more money they spend on bigger bands, they do actually have data that there's less alcohol-related incidents when they have a better event. The other thing is their expenses are going up. I'm sure that they would be telling you. Artist premiums are rising, as well as they're looking to buy scanners. There'll be scanners that are attached to iPods so that they can scan IDs, know who's coming in, graduate student, undergrad, and have better data on attendance for the future. So that's a cost that is a big sunk cost that they're looking to draw down sort of their pool. But you want to pay for that over a longer period of time.
Slope Day Programming Board believes that is also an initiative directly aimed at graduate students that don't want to be part of the mosh pit that occurs in front of the stage, but instead can enjoy the event from further out. Oh, great. So
we have 1 minute. Sorry.
Where should we use that?
Down here.
Down here would be great.
Sorry we're late. We thought it was at the Big Red Barn.
You can sit in the seat.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That Shirley back there, you need to start right at 6:50. Can we give them a couple more minutes? Are there any objections to going to 7:05? Seeing none, we can give you more than a minute.
Apologies for that. So hi everyone, my name is Noel Cornelio. I'm the executive chairperson for the Slope Day Programming Board, and to my left is Jonathan Rao. He's our finance director and administrative director for the Slope Day Programming Board. Essentially, we're coming here to you today to ask for an increase in the allocation from the GPSA student allocation fee. Briefly, just to talk about the past, I think it's safe to say that we all know what Slope Day is, the end of the year concert and community event that's held on the last day of classes. Historically, this has been an entire student body organization and an entirely student event, meaning that anyone is invited to this event as well as anyone is allowed to help plan the event. Our organization is open to both undergraduate and graduate students, and all of our board members can also be filled by graduate students, so we just want to let you know that. In terms of where we've come in the past few years, the last time that we asked for our funding request, essentially we were not fully independently funded. Currently, Slope Day is fully funded by students. We don't get any help from the administration, from the university at all. again, we are a financially independent organization. We have had increased attendance. Last year we had 17,500 students attend. 25% of your overall students, so 25% of all graduate and professional students attended Slope Day. So that's a number that has been increasing, and we've confirmed this with Evan at one of our e-board meetings that he attended. Last but not least, we've listened to you. 3 years ago, we had a graduate student-only zone where only graduate students could essentially take part in this. And then the year after, we had given you, listening to you, we offered a premium beer sale. So that, again, we've listened to you. And last but not least, we've essentially gone on to look for bigger artists that we think that would essentially cover the entire student body. Last year, you know that we had Nelly, who essentially we're looking for a kickback artist, someone that both the undergraduates can enjoy and someone that the graduate students grew up with and can enjoy as well. So, I'm not saying you guys are old. Anyway, so essentially that's where we've come so far. I just wanted to turn it over to John right now, who will talk about quickly the financials and why we're asking for more money.
We have about 3 minutes total.
Okay.
It'd be great to get some questions.
Definitely.
Sure. Okay, so we are asking for $6 from the GPSA, and kind of the math behind that is our calculation of allocation from the student assembly versus allocation from the grad student assembly. Currently, we get $243,000. From the student assembly, we get $18,360 from the GPSA. The allocation per attendee, that's assuming 65% of undergrads attend Slope Day, 25% of grads attend Slope Day, comes out to $2,769 per undergrad attendee and $1,224 per grad. We think that a $6 allocation from the GPSA would help to reach funding parity. As Noel mentioned, we're completely student-funded now. That's what's changed in the past 2 years. The cost of Slope Day haven't really gone up. We've just started paying the full cost of Slope Day. And at $3.06 an allocation, we plan to decline at GPSA funding. And at this level, we think it's in our best interest to charge grad students $25 a ticket. We don't necessarily see that as a negative. We would still value GPSA and grad involvement in event planning and artist selection. Because grad students, we think a lot of grad students attend and would continue to attend Slope Day. So we want to leave it up to grad students to determine for themselves the value of Slope Day, because we think it's very tough. The GPSA Appropriations Committee told us to kind of look long and hard about how we can add value, and I think it's kind of tough for us to determine value. So we see this as kind of shifting the cost to those who would want to pay for the event, if that's a route that you guys would want to take. And I guess consider now that we are entirely student-funded, we face pressure from the GPSA Appropriations Committee every year, as well as the SA Appropriations Committee, to keep the student activity fee low. And we've basically been told that undergrads cannot, moving forward, continue to subsidize grad students' attendance on Slope Day. So we believe $6 is a fair allocation, and the question that you guys need to ask yourselves is, should all grad students be paying for an event that only a quarter of grad students attend? So any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Very quickly, I know you mentioned that the artist is determined in part by a survey. Mm-hmm. I'm offered the executive board to send out that survey of all the graduate students we can reach when that survey comes out.
And our first survey is most likely coming out next week for the entire student body. Christopher?
I'm sorry. While I was trying to say the things that were part of the presentation that I thought you might have made, I was under the impression that your application was $7.
$6.
It's not $6.
It's $6.
It's $6.
Okay, so sorry about me exploding that.
Don't worry about it.
No,
it's $6.
$6.
Thank you.
Kyle, if there are further points, raise your hand.
I know that there are, in addition to students, that have been involved into university faculty and staff, and you said that it's going to become an entirely student-funded event. How do university employees contribute to that for their
Well, university employees constitute the majority, if not essentially 90% of all the volunteers working on Slope Day. We understand that, you know, we aren't charging them, but at the same time, they're providing their own services and their time to do things that no one has essentially volunteered to do from a student perspective. So that's essentially why we have not asked for employees to pay to come to Slope Day, and more so rarely any of them come, just for the enjoyment of it.
Since we're short on time, two more questions. Leanne?
We don't have those numbers on us, but in regards, I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice, but just in regards to EMS and police, this is a point that got brought up during our appropriations committee. We just want to acknowledge the fact that, yes, okay, so a lot of our EMS use goes to undergrads, but that doesn't mean that we're cutting out EMS use for graduate students. If a grad student's sick, we're not going to stop the EMS from helping you out. The EMS is there for anyone to use. More so, the police isn't there to just go after undergrads. They're also there to protect all concert goers. And so, essentially, if you're talking about plane costs with EMS and police, then I would say that all services are being used by the Cornell students. In terms of all of our costs, we haven't decreased costs because, again, just given everything, there's no way to cut costs right now if we're keeping at the same level that we are.
And I just add to your question, we don't have the figures for medical transports in front of us, but we do have attendance figures and higher attended, bigger name slope days, namely Snoop Dogg in 2005 and Seven and Nelly in 2010 were the highest attended slope days. And, you know, our logic goes that the more people that are out on the slope, the less people that are drinking in College Town, that are drinking in fraternities and such.
Evgeny?
I was just wondering, like you mentioned you're independently funded.
Yes.
Why did that happen? And how does that affect what you do? Is there a benefit or a cost to that?
Sure. So by independently funded, we mean that we are completely student funded. That's just the essay and the GPSA. We used to rely on contributions from the Dean of Students Office. In some years, we got a bailout from CCC, the Cornell Concert Commission, a couple of years ago. We never used to pay for our police, EMS, and a lot of other, the Cornell shops, the Cornell workers that come to set up for the event. And being financially independent has kind of helped us to restore good relations with a lot of these various groups on campus that, you know, we're having an event and we're actually paying for it ourselves.
Let's thank Noelle and John for coming in. I'd now like to recognize Shirley Gu from the International Students Program Control.
Sorry, really.
Sorry to cut you off.
Should we do this here? Okay. What? Oh, okay. I thought it's
No.
But how do we?
Look at me.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Right here.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. We are International Students Board. We actually changed our name to International Student Board, so we are now ISB. Thank you for letting us present. My name is Shirley Gu. I'm the president of ISB.
And I'm Paul Chang. I'm the VP of Finance for ISB.
So ISB is a group representing people who are into promoting international culture. So for our board members, we are made of 11 people, a good mix of Americans and international students. So for international students, we have people from Italy, Dubai, Argentina, China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, just all over the place. And our mission is to promote cultural awareness and diversity on campus. So the job function of ISB is two parts. One is financing and one is planning. So for the financing part, what we do is every single week we come together and groups submit budget sheets to us, and every week we'll have hearings and people come to us, we look at their budget sheet, we will give them a lot of suggestion and recommendation on maybe they can lower the cost on publicity or they can change a venue to lower the cost. And at the end, we give them a funding decision about how much money we want to give them. And for the planning board, we usually hold 1 to 2 big events every semester to promote our own international culture. So we have had mini World Cup, we've had the basketball and international ice cream social, international festival events like that. So for the financing part, the reason we think ISBU will be eligible for the funding is actually 39.2% of graduate students are international. And for the culture groups on campus, it was 236 in year 2009, but it's actually 331 in year 2011. And also, for ISB, we're actually doing a pretty good job to get more groups be aware of our existence. So from year 2007 to 8, we have 61 groups, and to last year, we actually managed to fund 77 groups. And do you have anything to add for
financing? Yeah, so some of you might think like, well, these are a lot of these clubs are undergraduate like clubs. Why does GPSA need to like give us money for this? Well, the thing is that like a lot of the attendees for the events that these cultural groups hold have graduate student attending. And also this year we also managed to publicize more to grad students, and we've had about two or three more groups so far from the graduate like GPSA to apply for funding from us.
Yeah, a lot of groups, even though they are registered under SAFC, like last week we had Cornell Indonesian Students Association, they told us they have 20 members in the club, but 16 of them are graduate students, but they are still registered under SAFC. And also, just in general, like we also send emails to every single culture groups on campus just to make sure people are aware of like us as a funding source. And for planning board, as I mentioned, we've held these kind of events. This is a picture for the masquerade ball. Just going through the pictures, I guess. Also masquerade ball. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This is mini World Cup. We usually have 16 teams representing different countries and come together and play soccer.
And last year we had several, I think about like three or four teams out of 16 teams that are actually made out of grad students.
Yeah.
And they won.
Yeah, they were champions, yeah. And that's the international festival that we do every 2 years. So that's about ISB. And we are applying for $1.55, I believe. So if you guys have any questions for us.
A very quick point of clarification on the methodology of the survey. When you read the survey, as you've heard, the International Students Board is an organization that funds other events. What the survey committee did was they chose some of the biggest ones and said, have you attended these? Which means that there may well be more people attending some of the other events. They just weren't included in the survey. So we have about 2 minutes for questions.
Just a point of information, their current funding is at 146 and they're asking for an increase to 155. I believe that those are the numbers. So.
Yeah, but the year before it was 151.
Yeah,
so.
It's a 9-cent increase. Just one.
If you'd like to ask a question, please raise your flag. Carl.
Do you have requirements for the activities that you fund for them specifically advertising to graduate students? And if you don't, would that be something you'd be willing to consider, like requiring that they send advertisers through the GPSA newsletter?
Okay, one thing we do is for all the events applying for us, we actually send down our Friend of ISB listserv, which is made of a lot of graduate students. And like during our hearing, we always tell them like try to publicize to more people, like send it down, like just a bunch of listserv. So I believe like it should have. But we are willing to send down.
Yeah, I mean, like myself,
And your board, one of the main functions that it serves is delaying the connectivity funding to student groups. Since there is overlap in this function, what value does your board bring to attention that you think is a value that the GPSA actually doesn't have?
So to answer that question, well, part of the reason why is because we're all, so the board members are mainly made up of international students, and we know what the needs of international students, like when they hold an event, are. Like, what is important to this event? What is the central theme? We might know it better than other, like the GPSA, because of like other the people who are in the organization. And also, there are some limitations of, I think, what the GPSA can fund. So I think it's one of the things that they don't fund is food. And then...
It depends.
But SAFC doesn't fund food, and a lot of clubs under SAFC need money, and graduate students, people do go to those events. So.
Time for one very quick question. Seeing none, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we now entertain comments in open forum, or else a motion to adjourn. Motion to adjourn, moved by Allison, seconded by Evgeny. Okay.
Sorry, I was hoping that we can get a list of the organizations that will be coming to talk to us. I may be pretty available, but I don't know.
It just happened. That was it.
Well, that's it. There's no more.
There are other organizations that ask for funding, but they're not coming to the presentation. There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second? Seconded by Evgeny. Is there any objection to adjourning the meeting? Very quickly, here's our next meeting, 31st, same place. On the agenda, the Appropriations Committee will be presenting their recommendations upon the groups that you just heard from, as well as several others. Thanks very much.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.